floating format, so we'll take your phone calls this hour. I'll have open lines next hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Charles, when do you think this hybrid tinkering occurred?
Oh, probably. I mean, you know, it's interesting because I listen to people like Zachariah Sitchin and others who have their timelines when they try to date these huge megalithic stone structures and so on. And I think there was a point in time, maybe 10, 12,000 years ago, something like this. I'm just guessing, but it seemed to correlate with the sudden burst of suddenly we went from this very primitive sort of hunter-gatherer, or even not even that functional, to like we were building things and creating civilizations. It just seems like such a radical and sudden shift that something happened. Or maybe it was a couple of different changes, you know, over some larger length of time. I don't claim to be an expert in that kind of archaeology, but I certainly would be willing to look at a correlation between radical sudden changes in civilization as we see it, and then some kind of genetic marker that could be possibly identified. One, well, speaking of which, I don't want to squeeze in one more thought. Sure. On the set of slides that's in it, on this fourth set, you'll see this picture of these alien characters coming out of a spaceship, and it says, "Am I the true face of God?" And on the bottom it says, "We're here for Gene Porter, too." Well, what that is, that's an ad for a software company that does a lot of this genetic hybridization analysis. It's a software tool. That ad appeared in Biotechniques magazine, which is a very high-end, peer-reviewed, you know, very technical journal, represents the biotech industry. That ad appeared for several issues. Now, people can say it's kind of a joke, but, you know, there's a lot of strange things that are sort of oozing in and out of the biotech world where people are kind of offering their own little sort of humorous clues as to things that they might be possibly thinking about. So that was an ad in a very high-end journal. I thought that was kind of funny. The other thing I wanted to say is, just to get back to the Russian-China-India space collaboration, the other thing that I wanted to point out, and then we can certainly go to phone calls, if this collaboration were the first to come out in the world that says, yes, we found life, we got it, here it is, here's the fossils, here's the microbes, you know, they can clearly show the evidence, that's the new Sputnik. Can you imagine
Yes. The
change of political prowess that they would have to sort of dominate the world's position if we were to sort of reshape ourselves in a new civilization? They would become the voice. I mean, the political consequences are much more than perhaps a lot of people realize, and I think that's a thing to consider.
Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air. Hi there. Welcome to Coast. You're with Charles Osman.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes. Hi. I wanted to add, I don't know if you've heard of Zipf's Law. It's Z-I-P-F.
I don't know. No, I've heard that.
Applying to, I actually read this in Graham Hancock's book, Supernatural, that I heard about from your show. It's Zipf's Law. It has to do with coding, like the it's languages and like the rank of the word used in the language. And I guess every language has the same slope. And the junk DNA codes as a language, and the coding DNA does not.
I'm not sure I followed the question exactly, but let me see if I can sort of backtrace and see if it works. I did work in AI some years ago, and I actually worked in linguistic ontologies, believe it or not. That's the actual technical term for it. And we were looking at how different word groupings and different languages sort of have similar sort of knowledge orientations, and we were trying to come up with this very clever scheme for doing AI in different languages. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with what you're talking about, but the one thing I will say is that DNA is a coding mechanism, and it does have a very specific capacity. It's like a base 4 numbering system, really. And so a lot of people who are actually building DNA computers, I'm not kidding, this is actually being done, look at it from that perspective. Now, I don't know if that's a match to what you're saying or not, but those are the two things I might offer in response to your question. Yeah, if I've misunderstood, I apologize. But
that's exactly it. That's just what I read in Graham Hancock's book. I can't take any credit for it.
Okay, fair enough. That's
okay,
true.
You.
And in fact, one thing I'll toss in, speaking of the Singularity Institute, because they sort of look at this merging between AI and human intelligence. There's a sort of a threshold where the two become equal and sort of co-connected. One of the pathways to get to that point is to actually build engines, sort of like neural networks, as it were, but based on a DNA system. I mean, this is really being done. In fact, I chair a conference, or I've chaired a number of conferences, which has to do with a sort of mixture between AI and computing and nanotech. And so one of the people that presented at my conference was a company called Gnome Tech out of New Mexico, and they were one of the participants. So you've probably heard of this DARPA challenge where they take vehicles and the vehicles have to steer themselves through a complex environment. And last year, it went from like not being able to work at all to like they had vehicles going over, you know, tens of miles through complex urban environments. I mean, that's how fast this this whole enterprise of AI applied to smart vehicles has gone. And one of the contenders and one of the people in that mix of folks developing new technologies developed a DNA-based computing engine to help with some of the cognition processes that were involved in one of those vehicles. I mean, that was actually done. So, I mean, this is a thing that's being done as we speak. So that may shed some light on that concept.
Okay, next up, let's go to East of the Rockies. Welcome to the program. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask Charles if, with all the work that we're doing with DNA and micro or nano technology, if he thought it would be feasible or if there was any work already being done in modifying DNA so that an organism can transform itself from a carbon-based unit to maybe a silicon-based unit and perhaps extend our longevity or perpetuate our longevity.
Yeah, no, I sort of know where you're going. The transhumanist types are really into this idea that we could upload ourselves into, you know, a computer or something, or change our biochemistry to a different form that would live forever and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I completely buy the reality. I mean, I understand the theory of it, but to the best of my knowledge, no one's ever actually done this or even shown a way that it could be done. I mean, it's an interesting theory. And
No research being done?
Not that I know of. And I mean, I could be wrong. I don't claim to know everything. I'm just saying in the areas that I have physically had interaction with or papers I've read, that kind of thing, I haven't seen any evidence like that. But it's a great idea. I just don't have any evidence for it.
Certainly, if we're going to survive a kill shot from the sun or any of these disasters that are...
Well, you know, when I saw the film AI, and I was quite impressed, actually, with the concept that it was probably about as well done as it could be for that kind of a film. The thing that was most interesting was that, I don't know if you saw the film, but at the very last scene, everybody was robots, or these sort of quasi-robot-like entities. And in the current day, people would buy children, because they couldn't have children, or the rate of children having was falling off. And so there were these robotic children that behaved like humans, and they were friendly, and parents would buy these things so they could have a child in their life. And then the world went through a horrific climate change, and everything sort of died off. In the last scene, they pulled one of these child robots out of the water and sort of activate them. And by then, we had mutated into sort of weird, maybe we were silicon life forms at that point. They didn't make it clear in the film. But as a way to recapture what had once been the original sort of carbon-based life form, they activated this robot boy's brain so they could kind of like get a holographic view or a sort of sense of what had once been. And that was the final scene in the film. So, I mean, there are people who think this way. I just don't know of any evidence at this point in time.
Well, this is absolutely fascinating. If I could just follow up with one second question. I wondered if you read Greg Braden's book, The God Code.
No, I know about it, but I haven't had a chance to. But I have heard the title. Yeah.
Apparently, he was able to use the basic four proteins in DNA to develop a way of finding a code where there is a message in all basic forms of DNA that reads something very very simple that says that God is within us all, or something.
Yeah. I would not discredit that idea. In fact, what I was hoping to allude to, and thanks for that, that's actually a very good, interesting comment, and thanks for bringing it up, because in the last hour, I was sort of wandering around this topic of saying we found all this so-called junk DNA, or DNA that we can't quite explain why it's there. My little two cents worth was I thought maybe that might be a clue as to when we had our own DNA tinkered with by somebody else, but it would also, at the same time, possibly be an area where a code of like that sort is embedded, and maybe, just going way out there to fringe, maybe it's supposed to be that if we progress a bit further and we get a little more clever at how we can actually read the DNA and actually understand what it's saying, that would be the real message, that if there was some kind of a spiritual message or some kind of a design strategy for telling us what we should be doing and how we should live and what we should be, I don't know, focusing on, if we could actually read that from the DNA, maybe that's what it's supposed to be. I mean, it's not a bad idea, actually. It's certainly quite possible.
Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm calling from Wyoming, and I was listening to the gentleman on the way home. And, you know, you're certainly entitled to your opinions, but all the stuff you say about Christians is pretty off base, and about the administration as well. Because actually what you're doing by not being able to find all the DNA and all that stuff is you're denying God is what you're doing, because he created it all, and you're not going to be able to figure it out with all your little theories.
And I don't know. I would say that God is everywhere. But when a certain narrowly defined definition of God is translated into kind of a political mechanism, that's where I can have maybe part ways. But I'm not denying the existence of God or denying the existence of some kind of spiritual connectivity between all living things.
Well, I don't see where you get it with the political thing, because I don't think that's true at all.
Well,
President Bush might be a Christian, but he's actually, people ought to be thankful for him, because at least he protected us from the terrorists, considering if we get a Democrat in, God forbid.
Well, we all have our opinions.
Oh, well, yes, we do, but I just think that I'm just...
That's another show all by itself,
yeah,
isn't it?
I just feel like, you know, I've heard other stuff like what you're saying tonight, and I really think, you know, people are always trying to show how man can do this, man can do that, and all this other stuff, and all you're doing is denying the truth, and you guys aren't going to be able to figure it out because you guys are denying the truth, and one day you may find out. I hope so.
Well, we'll probably find out a version of truth that's closer to what we think we can understand. I'll put it that way.
Different views to get to the same road.
There we go. That was what I was trying to say. Thank you.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you, Carl.
My question was how nanotechnology would tie in with modern-day amalgamy. And the second question, well, that's pretty much what I wanted to ask. If there's any,
I'm sorry,
any progress.
Did you mean alchemy or amalgamy? I wasn't quite sure I got that. Were you saying alchemy? I couldn't quite hear.
Making gold.
Oh, okay. Well, actually,
precious metals.
Okay, well, actually, that refers to alchemy. And, oddly enough, there is a process for that in the real world called transmutation. You can look it up and read about it, but what it is. And we did this at Lawrence Laboratory back in 76. We turned a very tiny amount of lead into a little bit of gold. But how it was done was the following way. We took the atoms of lead and sort of broke them open by bombarding with neutrons, and then they would recombine. And without a long physics lecture, basically every element has these sort of daughter elements are called. They're the isotopes of the root element. And there's something called the table of nucleides, which will explain how the different isotopes transition from one element to another. So if you sort of know where you are on that table of nucleides, you can take an actual element, break open its nucleus, and then have it reform into a different element after it goes through a series of these daughter stages. And we actually made lead into gold. Now, we only made a few micrograms, and it took many thousands of dollars worth of electricity to drive the accelerator to make it, but at least it was shown that it could be done. So, I mean, in an odd kind of way, yes, this was done. It's not nanotechnology. It's more in the sort of particle physics world. But yes, technically that's true. It's possible. Now, one thing I might add, by the way, if we were in space and had much cheaper energy, we could do things like transmute different elements, as an example. I'll just throw it out there. At a much lower cost.
Thank you. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. That was kind of cagey that way. Hi there.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Good, sir. Thank you.
All right. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. A comment is we are living in good days. And these days, everyone will be enlightened and the truth will be made known, no matter what obstacles there is to try to push them to the side.
All right.
I would like to ask your guest, have he read any books by Dr. Malachi Z. York?
I'm sorry, again, please. I couldn't quite hear. Malachi who?
Dr. Malachi Z. York.
Never heard the name. No, I'm sorry, I haven't heard the name.
Oh God. If you're looking for the answers to junk DNA and the leap from the Homo sapiens to humans where we are.
Okay, sure.
He's answered all those questions. Are eventually we're supposed to get to a Homo spiritual.
I would agree with that. I think that we are supposed to transcend to a more spiritual being. I would certainly have an argument with that. And I think that sadly we're having kind of a bumpy road, but if we could actually see the larger picture, we possibly will make it that far. I would agree with that much of it.
And the reason why they have so many artificial flavors and why they're doing so many things to our food and our water and our air is to keep us from making that leap, because the whole earth is going to go into another dimension, and then those who haven't made that leap into a spiritual state are going to stay in the third dimension. But if you ever find time, Google his name. Go to Amazon, you know, if you can find any of his books, they're like $300, $400, some of them.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I will certainly look the name up, and I'm always open to new ideas, sir.
Dr. Reverend Malachi of New York.
All right. Fair enough. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I appreciate you being part of the program. Let's go next to our... Whose turn is it? East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey there. Great show. Awesome show, you guys.
He's doing a great job for us. Go ahead.
Well, my name's Tommy. I'm calling from Shreveport, Louisiana. And I have a just wanted to know your thoughts on this. The end of times, of course, quote, are coming up.
Yes, very close. Yep.
And a lot of people are saying that it could possibly be the age of enlightenment. Do you think that all of these medical technologies that are just on the precipice of greatness, where you know we're almost unlocked stem cells, and we've almost unfolded the human genome project, and we've done this. Do you think that perhaps once we actually crack all of this, it will bring about the age of enlightenment? Because the age of enlightenment may actually be the crumbling of the evangelicals.
Yeah, I sort of sense where you're going, and I want to say this very carefully because, again, I'm not trying to insult or inflame anyone's personal faith. That's not my thing at all. What saddens me sometimes is that being spiritual is a beautiful thing, and
absolutely,
being connected to the larger sort of cosmos and the supreme being, that's what we should be doing. The sadness is to get trapped in these weird little sort of political constructions to sort of contort this into a specific interest or some kind of agenda. But I would certainly say that we are getting very close now to unraveling how consciousness works. And I have a whole different set of slides and a whole different lecture that I sadly don't have time for. But a bunch of folks who come from sort of the biophysics world are merging with the folks from the quantum physics world to understand what consciousness might be and how it actually operates. And it may, in fact, show that we have an entire new physics, as it were, to explain how living things and living systems are interconnected in a non-tangible way, but in fact are connected. And that is like the first hard evidence to show that this may actually be part of this process. However, as we have ever more functional tools to examine these processes and begin to codify and characterize these things and how they might work, these tools are also dangerous. In other words, every time we go a little further up the ladder, we got a more interesting toolbox, but the toolbox could also be, you know, very badly abused. And so part of the challenge is to invent the new tools and appreciate them, but not let them be used for negative or harmful purposes. And that, in fact, is part of the evolution we're supposed to go through. And I would say right now it's kind of a coin flip. It's sort of the dice is still being rolled on the table. And I'm hoping that if enough people begin to see the larger picture and can understand that we have wonderfully powerful tools, but we need to apply them in a very proactive and sort of harmonious kind of way, that will become, you know, the sort of majority, as it were, and that will drive the process. But it's not the tools that will determine what the outcome is. It's how they're applied, if I could put it that way.
How do we get to your website, Charles? Those people who are driving around and they don't have
indeed.
The luxury
thank
of
you so much.
Being locked up? Go ahead.
Two websites, historianofthefuture.com. I'll say it again, historianofthefuture.com. And then also I'm going to be speaking at the Tesla Tech Extraordinary Technology Conference, which is a really cool event.
Cool.
In fact, sure, Charles Schultz will be there as well. And that is teslatech.info.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls with Charles Ostman before next hour's Open Lines. Well, next hour we'll open up the phone lines. We'll have open lines, but when we come back, we'll take our final calls with Charles Ostman on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Charles Ostman. We're going to take your final calls as well. Charles, what's new for you? You beyond the speaking engagements
I'm also working on several projects. And the things I work on, I really try to select, I think, will have interesting impact upon the world. And one of them actually is a bioremediation project. The other one is a very interesting way to recycle tires and convert them into road-building components. And this sounds a little strange, but all over the world, there, especially in Africa, for instance, there are, you know, huge amounts of tires that are sort of dumped there and left over from previous activities. And there's a fellow in West Virginia who's come up with a very clever technique for building these cylindrical sort of columns that he can fill with a type of cement that he's invented, and he's got a company and so forth. So I'm trying to help get his technology out into the world, because I think that when you can build roads and build small dikes and dams like this and allow small to mid-size investments, as it were, bring this kind of structural component to areas that are economically challenged, it drastically changes the quality of life in their situation. So a lot of things I work on are things like that, bringing some kind of low-cost solution to difficult areas so that they can become more self-empowered and more functional as a society. And I think if you're going to, about that previous lady who called in earlier, if you're going to combat terrorism, if you're going to combat the things that really bring harm and evil to the world, sure, one can do that with bullets and tanks and planes, and I get all that. I'm you know, sort of pro-military in a way. But I think a much more long-term and practical way to really solve that is to change the quality of life, because wherever you have poverty, isolation, and lack of education and so forth, that's where you breed terrorism. That's where you find people who will succumb to those kinds of interests and ideas and become the terrorists of tomorrow. So I think we can do to change that that situation. You get back much more than you give if you sort of look at it from that perspective.
I agree, Charles. I think there are two types of terrorism. The one you described that is grown, homegrown, in that kind of an environment, which we have to fix, and that's an easier way to fix.
Yes.
And then there's another group of terrorism that is created by governments to disrupt.
Yes, exactly.
Those are very difficult to handle.
They're very difficult to handle, and the best way to get at those, in my humble opinion, is to change the nature of the life amongst the populations they're trying to influence. In other words, chaos is a commodity. If you look at what's happening in Iraq now, the reason Iraq's become such a mess is because, again, you know, various outside parties, like Iran, for instance, have instigated and exacerbated the chaos by bringing in these foreigners to sort of stir up a lot of trouble, blow things up, and kill people. And everybody's on edge now. In other words, wherever you have chaos that can be utilized as a tool of influence, that's where you're going to get more terrorism, more craziness. So anything you can do to prevent that from happening starts with changing the nature of life in those areas.
Let's go to the first-time caller line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Am I on?
You sure are, sir.
Oh, my name is Ken. I'm calling from Springfield.
Springfield, whereabouts?
Ohio.
Ohio, okay.
Yeah, I just want to tell you I'm a huge fan of yours, George, and I love your show.
Thank you, Ken.
I wanted to say that I'm an evangelical Christian, and I don't. I'd be astounded and happy if we found life or proof of life on other worlds and other planets. It doesn't bother me. I don't think it disproves Jesus or his message of love, and I don't think it disproves a belief in God whatsoever. I do think, and like I said, I'd like to find it, but I think there's a big leap to finding junk DNA and then believing that leads to, well, perhaps maybe, you know, aliens came down and tinkered with our DNA, and I think that's kind of a large leap.
First of all, I want to say I've met a lot of young evangelicals who are just like you, and I really respect what you're saying, because they see a larger picture, and they see that if God created the universe, we're like a component in the universe, and the most important thing is the love and the compassion and the harmonious relationship we can have with our world and with our other fellow beings. I mean, that is the real message. That's what, when Jesus Christ walked this planet, that's what he was trying to say. That was his message. And it's very sad that others, long after he passed away, you know, used his presence as a sort of a tool to influence their own political interests. But you're 100% right, and I'm very much with you on that one. The only thing I would say, and I'm going to make a slight correction because George asked me about this earlier, and here's what I'm trying to say. If it's possible to accept that there are other intelligent beings other than us that are part of the larger God-created universe, and let's sort of walk that path, then it might be possible, it just might be possible, that as part of the larger mechanism, that other entities would come by from time to time and sort of shepherd or kind of nurture our evolutionary path, if you want to walk that way. Not in a harmful way, not in a way to discredit the value of the spiritual message, but rather it's just a piece of the larger puzzle. And by the way, I should point this out, on this chart that shows this currently defined path where the first evidence of so-called human DNA appeared, that actually occurred about 100,000 years ago. So maybe I should revise my previous statement, because that, if we're going to pick a sort of a biological start point, that could be it. Although there's several points along this path, going to about maybe 10 or 12,000 years ago, where you suddenly had this like radical change in terms of civilization and complexity. So maybe we had a handful of tinkerings along the way that could be possible. I was just offering the idea. I'm not saying it's hard. In fact, I'm just saying it was a theory.
Can I make one comment about that?
I'm sorry, excuse me?
Can I make one more comment about
that? Yeah, please, by all means, sure.
I would not be against that. I don't think that that's out of the question or wrong. I think that a lot of misunderstanding comes when people try to literally interpret things that were meant to be symbolic.
Yes.
I mean, are you going to explain to somebody in the Old Testament mind frame genetics or anything? I mean, I get what you're saying, but until I see the aliens, until they come down and talk to me, I'm still leaning towards the opinion that unfortunately we might be the most spiritually advanced creatures we've seen, and I'd love to tell them about Jesus, and I think we need to get our world together too.
I think we're always
looking for somebody to save us out there, or the aliens to come help us, and I would really like it if they did. I mean, they couldn't be any worse than the aliens in Washington.
Yeah,
but
I agree with you. I'm with you. Listen, I'm with you on this one, and I might offer a further thought. I think if the ETs are watching us, we have to show that we're capable of understanding this larger picture. They're not going to save us, but they'll be watching to see what we do. I might offer that much. But I'm certainly with you. I mean, everything else you said, I have no argument at all, and I think it's interesting they would point that out.
I think we're being watched now, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm convinced of it. And I've seen evidence that it kind of convinces me. I was very skeptical a few years ago, and recently I've seen things that have actually changed my mind quite strongly.
You have made a full turnaround.
I have made a full turnaround because I have physically seen myself things that I could not explain. And I'm a person that actually spent time working in SDI. I've been to various Air Force bases. I've seen the SR-71 flight. I've seen the Aurora space plane. I've seen a lot of things which some people could say, oh, that was what that was. And something I saw, it was none of the above. And I don't know what it was, but it was something different than anything I've been familiar with.
You and I may be making a trip together, you know.
That may be possible, and I'd love to sort of share some more details about that. But there's something going on. And if there ever was a time when they would sort of be taking a very close look, this would be that exact moment in time, because we are right at the very edge of that event horizon.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Take it away.
Hi, my name is John. I'm calling, listening on KVI in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, thanks, John. Our number one station. Good to have you with us.
George, Charles, it's an honor to talk to you. We've covered a lot of topics, and I'm kind of curious, you know, politics and religion aside, or space exploration, it's like, is there a question about the odds of survival for the human race? This is something I'd like to hear your take on.
Yeah, actually, there's a guy named, there's a couple of folks I'm going to mention, but one's name is Stephen Goff, and he wrote a very interesting paper. It's called The Seven Stages of Evolution. In fact, I have a copy of it hidden somewhere. But he talks about this idea that we evolved from sort of this low base life form, you know, physical molecules, and we sort of tend to eventually become more like quantum beings where there's no physical matter at all. And he has this vision of how that might be. And there's other folks who've written similar documents, and they have their own particular interpretation. But I would suggest the following, that to get through these evolutionary challenge threshold points, you have to go through a series of tests to sort of qualify or show that you're capable of adapting to this next level. And part of that's because it's a protectionary mechanism. In other words, if I were to become God for a nanosecond, which is ludicrous, let's just pretend I was for a nanosecond, I would tend to think in terms of engineering. I would tend to think in terms of how do I protect the larger environment so that whatever evolves to the top of the food chain, as it were, doesn't wreak harm or havoc or evil upon the rest of the system. And so it would seem logical, at least in my framework of reference, that you would have to have the civilizations in question go through a series of tests, and probably a lot of them would fail. They would do themselves in because of their own stupidity or warlike activities, or they've squandered the planetary resource, or they were popular, or whatever it is. They didn't quite make it. And it would probably be a filtering process so that the select few that did get through were at least of a level of understanding so that they would not harm the larger cosmic ecology. That's just my very simplistic model, but that's kind of what I see.
Okay, next up, let's go to East of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
George, Charles. My question is about, DNA research and, genetic medicine therapy. Do you think in our lifetime that we'll see an application for this in the direction of possibly giving people talents that they might not have previously had?
Oh, yes. Why do you mention that? Because actually, this gets a little strange, but there's people in the military world who very much see the super soldier of the future as being a genetically modified humanoid to sort of serve these ideas. I'm not saying anyone's done it yet. I'm just saying that there's been very sort of open-ended discussions along these lines. Now, in more current-day world, there's a lot of stuff going on which has more to do with the integration of chips, actual electronic circuits, and sort of bioelectric circuits that can be implanted in various parts of the body, including the mind, or including the brain, to enhance certain kinds of cognitive skills or sensory capacities. This is actually being done as we speak. It's all still very much in the laboratory stage, but certainly the sort of basic building blocks of that kind of a process has been well-defined. It's surprising how far it's come. Now, the first adopters, of course, had to do with prosthetics, sensory prosthetics, people that had lost their hearing or were partially sight impaired, that sort of thing. now there's actually work going on to help schizophrenics, people that have sort of hallucinatory episodes because of brain chemistry. They can sort of implant a device that'll prevent that from happening. And the other one is epileptic seizures. There's a company called Medtronic. They actually do a lot of this kind of work. And they develop chips now that will eventually, I think in the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to see the first human trials, where people that have epileptic seizures can have this device implanted in their brain that will prevent those events from occurring. So somewhere down the road, you're going to have people who have intelligence quotient factors maybe changed, et cetera. There's a number of articles published. In fact, one of the slides I did not post because Lex, the guy that runs your website, who's a very nice guy and very patient, said, Charles, you can't put more than 10 images up. So I kind of got to a certain point and said, okay, fine enough. So one of the ones I didn't post was an actual article with this exact topic, and it shows some pictures of some biochip implants with these ideas in mind. So, I mean, genetically, I think further down the road that would be the case, possibly.
Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good. Thank you.
Long-time listener since 1983. Dr. Charles, I really believe that that lady who was just on there talking about that God did this and totally blow her point out of the water, I don't agree with her at all. I think the Lord put a lot of things here on this earth to help us, whether it was starting off with leaves and DNA and T's or whatever, to a certain point that things are going to get better, especially with stem cell research. And I hope and I pray that they really get some money in there to do things such as for diabetics with the pancreas.
The pancreas, that's exactly right, yes.
Yeah, and I would hope they can do something where they could take stem cells out of a newborn that nobody is related to, give an injection to that person in their pancreas, and have it regrow. Something like that would be phenomenal.
There's a lot of things. A friend of mine died of leukemia, which is a blood cancer that starts in the bone marrow. That would be another great example. A lot of neurological diseases, spinal bifida being one. I mean, there's a huge array of diseases and pathologies which could be very readily turned around if we had this resource. And one thing I will say, and again, not to get too far into the political stuff, but a lot of the sort of bioengineering types that I've come acquainted with, they've figured out that, you know what, even if we can't do it here, they simply go overseas. So right now the majority of this work isn't happening here just because of the current administrative leanings. So they go to places like Singapore, Australia, Scotland, you know, various parts of Asia, et cetera. In other words, it's a fast-moving target. And sadly, once again, because of a strange mishmash between quasi-theocratic, I don't know what you want to call it, and, you know, congressional oversight committees, essentially, the real movers and shakers have simply gone elsewhere, and these other countries may become the new purveyors of this industry just because of this current policy.
Exactly. And another thing, when you're talking about junk DNA, I believe that there's certain things in the body that uses and helps or maybe takes a part of that junk DNA and uses it for another thing. Just I think it was about a year ago, I watched a thing on semen and birth control and everything else, and they say that there's a certain semen sperm that's called the blocker, and what it does is it blocks other different semen that's been there from producing and going on. So this one will stop and block the way of it. It was on a PBS or something else.
Yeah,
I totally think, and I totally believe, because I've been in the medical field before, I've seen a lot of things from transplants and not transplants, but bone grafts and implants and things in my life. I mean, from where they used to be able to take a finger, now a hand, now an arm, now a lung, now and just everything. So more power to you, buddy. I hope things really go well. And I thank you very much. Thanks, George.
Well, thank you. And one final note, just toss in, for anyone that sort of has some question marks, it's like this. God, if you want to walk this path, we are somebody's creation or some larger, you know, entity sort of made this possible. Well, these things are here, and it's part of the larger ecology that this entity created. We should be utilizing it because we were given the capacity to do this. In other words, it's not a violation of some spiritual ethos. Rather, it's the exact opposite. It's what we're supposed to be doing. If we have been given the capacity to understand these tools and to apply them, that's the whole point. If we misuse the tools and do something evil or stupid with them, well, then we expunge ourselves. But the existence of the tools does not violate a spiritual ethos or a way of looking at the universe. In fact, it's the exact opposite. It more magnifies the splendor and the spectacularness of what we're here and what we're trying to do.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with Charles Ostman on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Charles. This is Jeff calling from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Hi, Jeff.
And I've just got a real quick question. Charles, you talked about microgravity processing in space.
Yes, that's right, yes.
And you mentioned one product was a protein crystal, and
yes,
then you went off
so.
On a tangent. But you mentioned maybe three other products you think might come out of a microgravity processing program?
Well, a friend of mine, and I can't go into it because it's, I've signed NDAs and
still,
he's got patents.
Still proprietary, huh?
But it deals with optics. I'll just put it that way. But a lot of things that have to do with getting molecules or crystals or something to line up a certain way or to form a certain kind of structure or to cooperate in some kind of integrated process, when gravity is not part of the equation, a whole bunch of things change all at once. And the amount of energy you have to spend and the kinds of strange confinements you have to instigate to make the different components behave a certain way, it changes completely. So there's a whole range of different manufacturing processes, all of which becomes drastically different and require a lot less energy to sort of instigate what you're trying to get if gravity's not in your way.
Do you have that on your website?
I don't, and I apologize. But I do a lot of this kind of work, and over time I'm sure that things will come to light. I publish papers from time to time. If you go to my website, what you see are a lot of just general articles and a few excerpts from some papers I've published and some talks. Again, it's not the best place to go to get this kind of stuff. But if you do a web search on microgravity and fabrication and materials or something along those lines, I'm sure you'll get lots and lots of papers that are published from all over the world.
Right, NASA has a lot of papers on that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, Charles, as we rapidly come to the end here for you, I want to thank you for being on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Always bring us phenomenal information. So in the next 5 years, I want your prediction. What do you think will be the biggest technological advance for us?
I think the thing that I'm most looking at is this whole idea of being able to build organisms from scratch as a way to create things that would otherwise be much more expensive. This idea of synthetic biology, I think, is going to be the next big thing. And there's other countries which are going to be pushing at this as we speak, and hopefully we'll have a chance to get in there. But the other thing is going green. That is much more efficient. Solar cells, batteries for electric vehicles. I mean, the whole genre of things that can change the way we look at our energy policy. Those two things fit together.
You got it. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
I'll be back in a moment. The year of the rat begins. Tension, disaster, turbulence. I want your predictions for the year of the rat, plus open lines on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.